Today is March 18th, the year 2009. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veteran History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Philip F. Kelly. Date of birth is July 4th, 1923. Place of birth is Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My name is Frank Reitinger, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the museum. Assisting me is Jim McCannell, who will operate the recording equipment. We'll now begin the interview. Okay, Phil, just kind of take it from the beginning.
Okay. Well, I graduated from high school in June of 1941, and that was right before the war started in December 7th, and the following year, in September of 1942, a friend of mine and I decided to enlist in the V-5 program, and the recruiting office was right in downtown Philadelphia, right near where I worked. And then, passing by Wanamaker's windows, we had seen these recruiting posters for the U.S. Navy V-5 cadet program. And since we had already registered for the draft, we decided to sign up in the Navy program, which we did in September of 1942. Oddly enough, the fellow who went with me to enlist was rejected on physical reasons, and fortunately I passed the test. I was sworn in the day after Thanksgiving in 1942. However, I was not called up until middle of April 43. And so that was about a 4.5 month wait to be called to active service. My first station was the University of Penn in a pre-flight program. And the interesting thing that the Navy did here was take high school graduates, which was the first time in their recruitment of people for the Navy aviation program. That was the first time that they took high school graduates without college education. Prior to that, you had to have a minimum of 2 years of college. What the Navy decided to do because of manpower needs was enlist younger high school graduates and train them and also educate them by sending them to pre-flight schools. The University of Penn was used in the Philadelphia area, and that's where I reported for duty about the middle of April in 1943. The future pilots who were involved at that time knew very little about the art and the skill of flying, most of us never having been in an airplane at that point. So the Navy program involved giving us education on two levels, one being flight preparation, the other being the job of making us into naval officers as well. So what they did at Penn was give us a combination of courses, some of which involved flying, such as Morse code and theory of flight, and so on. The other courses might have been in math and physics and things that we hadn't been exposed to, not having been to college or university. The course at Penn lasted about 3 months, and it involved the educational process with the courses that I had just mentioned previously, as well as physical training, and there was quite an emphasis on getting the boys in shape. We used to go out to Franklin Field and use the track there for running and for soccer. We also used the facilities of the University of Penn. Teachers also were not basically naval personnel. They were teachers who were trained by the Navy, but they were university teachers and professors. The course there lasted for 3 months, as I said, and when that was completed, we were then sent next to Moravian College up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which was a small religious school that was used by the Navy to continue the pre-flight training of courses that we had been getting. Plus, it was our first exposure to flying, and it was referred to by us as the CPT, Civilian Pilot Training Program, and the flying that we did, our introduction to flying, was taught by civilian pilots, instructors, and our flying was done in Piper Cubs, little old 65 horsepower yellow birds. The training program there lasted for 3 months again, and we got about 50 hours of flight time and more education in naval lore and in aviation lore. And one of the things that I remember most about Moravian College was the food there. I guess that was Pennsylvania Dutch territory at that time, and the women who cooked for us believed in hearty food, well-cooked, and they had to build up these skinny 19 and 20-year-old kids from Philadelphia. So there was also a pretty heavy emphasis on swimming and other athletic endeavors. So we would spend a half a day flying out of the old Allentown Bethlehem Airport and a half a day in the classroom. This program went on for about 3 years, I mean 3 months, excuse me, and after that program was over, we got sent to the University of North Carolina for more education and more physical training. The training program physically there was very active. We spent many hours in the pool practicing our techniques of the different strokes, but also learning such things as using your trousers in the water to make into life-saving air devices, life-saving devices that you could use to help stay afloat, and that type of thing. And so it was. Give me a little time out here.
We gotta hit record again, I guess.
Okay, some observations about the University of North Carolina. It was not such a big school in those days as it is today, but it was a nice facility. We were housed in housing that had been built for the college, so we had pretty nice facilities, like semi-private rooms and nice bathroom facilities and that sort of thing. There was a very heavy emphasis on the sports part of the physical education program, and we would have a different sport every 2 weeks, and that was the first time I ever had a football uniform on, and get selected to be a lineman offensively and defensively at all of 135 pounds or whatever I weighed at the time. I think when I enlisted in the Navy, I was 5 feet 10 and weighed 119 pounds, so which was not uncommon in those days. People didn't weigh any extra pounds during the tail end of the Depression. I also had 2 weeks of boxing, which was elective, but I thought it would be a good place to learn a little more of the fisticuffs process. And we used to box. I had about four boxing matches there, which lasted three rounds, three one-minute rounds. And it's surprising when you're in the ring how long it takes for a minute to transpire, if you've ever done it. But I held my own, and I think I won three out of four, but no knockouts or anything like that, because we used heavy gloves and a headpiece that gave you a pretty good amount of protection. So another interesting thing about Chapel Hill was that just to prove there was a war on, there was a contingent of Italian prisoners there who were kept there in their own quarters, and they used to work around the university, and they took care of the athletic facilities and things like that. And we used to see them playing soccer in their off time, and I think they were probably the only and the happiest bunch of prisoners that I've ever seen. They were out of the war, which wasn't too popular with the Italians, and they were having a little fun and eating well in North Carolina. Not that the food was that great. The schools that hired out to the Navy for these facilities, I guess the more economically they could feed you, the better it was for the bottom line. So, generally speaking, the food was better on the Navy bases than it was in the schools. So, after the three-month program there, we were sent to primary flight training. In my case, we went to Glenview Naval Air Station, which was just about 20 miles north of Chicago. So right on Lake Michigan. So I was sent there along with fellows in my class right after Christmas in 1943, and one of the great memories there is suiting up in heavy winter flying gear to learn how to fly the Navy aircraft in cold, cold, windy weather. And but when you're 19 or 20 years old, you just do it. You just do whatever you're told to do, especially if you've been to a parochial school with the Sisters of St. Joseph. You kind of grew up learning to do what you were ordered to do, and to sit up straight and keep your hands folded on the desk. So I guess that carried over in most of us, regardless of public school or Catholic school. The training at Glenview got serious with Navy flight instructors, experienced pilots. Most of them were JGs, and they had a large variety of personality types, and easy guys and tough ones, and don't get this guy for your flight checks, and so on. We also had our introduction to night flying while there, which was done on a dark evening with flare pots. The runways weren't lighted. These were the old days before night lighting on airports was everywhere. That was a thrilling experience, and one that you worried about before doing it, and then afterwards you didn't think it was so tough after all. While at Glenview, we also had our introduction to acrobatic flying and to formation flying and to things like short field emergencies. And while there, it usually took most fellows about 8 hours to solo in the old Stearman biplanes. But the course was pretty comprehensive, and when we finished there, we were ready for our next move, which was to Pensacola, Florida, for final training prior to getting our wings. When we got to Pensacola after a four-day train trip, we saw a lot of changes on the way, and we had plenty of time to look out the window. Eventually, after the four-day ordeal, we wound up in the train station at Pensacola, which was not a real big town in those days like it is today. It was pretty much devoted to Navy primary training. With the training there, again, lasted about 3 months in duration. And while there, we flew our first initial training in Volt-T vibrators, a little more sophisticated airplane than the old yellow Stearman biplanes. And after a short course in those airplanes, the vibrators, we switched to the SNJs, which was a retractable gear and a more sophisticated airplane than we had flown previously. Training there consisted of advanced training. You're flying with retractable gear and variable pitch propeller And that was where we got our introduction to gunnery and to instrument flying, which was a very thorough process, I'd say, particularly the instrument flying, because we were exposed to a good old Link trainer at that time, which was a much harder device to fly than the real McCoy. So we had quite a training period in the Link, the best part of it being the waves who put you through the course and trained you at the time. We also had our first experience at cross-country flying, which usually consisted of flying a triangular course. And fortunately, with the Gulf of Mexico in the local area, we always had a nap getting back to our field. And at that time, we used to fly by dead reckoning, and you plot your course based on the forecast winds. And I don't know if I ever saw the point at which I would identify the landmark for turning, but it didn't stop us from making the trip, and the whole part of the learning cycle. At this point, I'd like to say something about the Navy training program for aviation, and I think the Navy just did a marvelous job of taking 18, 19, and 20-year-old inexperienced kids that didn't have any flight experience whatsoever and molding them into, first of all, an officer. Whether we were gentlemen or not, I can't say. But in the Navy, you were considered to be an officer first and a pilot second. So I know they did a great job with the flight training. It was very comprehensive and well thought out. And the instruction was excellent all the way through. So that's just a little aside that I wanted to mention while I'm still on the subject of Pensacola. At any rate, we all seemed to survive pretty well. And the phase of check rides pretty much didn't exist by that time in the training period, because the less desirable pilots were weeded out and sent to some other branch of the Navy service by that time. In December of 44, I received my wings in the ceremony there with probably 30 or 40 other new pilots at that time, and we were then transferred after a 30-day leave, which was most welcome. We were transferred over to Cecil Field in Jacksonville for operational training. Now, take a little break here. Cecil Field.
Okay.
In January of 1945, we all reported, we graduates, that is, from Pensacola, reported to Cecil Field in right out of Jacksonville, Florida, for our operational training phase of the program. We were kind of classified as student pilots. We had our own barracks and our own mess, so we weren't permitted to, or had the opportunity to socialize too much with the older fellas and the instructors and so on. Not that we were prohibited from that, but when their day was done, they were free to go off the base, and we were free to stay on the base. So there was a war on, so there was this urgency about getting pilots trained and ready for fleet duty. So Cecil Field was where we moved into flying SB-2C Helldivers, which was an operational fleet dive bomber at that time. And we all thought that would be a kind of a difficult hair-raising process, but all these things seemed to be easier to do, not because of personal skill, but because of the training and the preparation that you had received in your previous flying in the Navy. So the primary emphasis here at Cecil was on learning how to dive bomb, and that was your primary reason for being there, as far as flying the airplane and maneuvering the airplane. That was something that we had been sufficiently experienced to do with without thinking. Things like flying in formation and using the hand signals when you were the lead pilot, and how to fly formation properly, that was all pretty well taken care of before we got to that stage. So most all of our training at Cecil was in dive bombing itself, which was done right near the field where we were stationed. And I'd also say that there were several outlying fields that were used for such things as the bombing practice and maybe emergency landings and that sort of thing, field carrier practice landings and so on. So the bulk of the training was done with actually going up with a flight of 10 and instructor and doing the dive bombing runs. And then we also had target practice, firing at a banner that was towed, and that training was, to the best of my recollection, done out over the ocean, since we weren't far from the beach, being at Cecil. And we also got to practice firing rockets at targets in the water that were being towed by motor launches. And that was a new experience for me. So, and it was also a very interesting phase of the training. Also, we had an interesting experience with our instructor while we were here. One senior instructor would instruct the same 10 student pilots for the whole period of time that we were at Cecil, and he would run this group kind of as a small wing would be on the on a carrier, and that was good experience for us. And the instructor, whose name was Hal Buell, a senior grade lieutenant, had three carrier assignments, three separate different assignments to the carrier. So he experienced most of the combat, or just about as much combat as a dive bomber pilot could get in World War II. He also was a very capable pilot and a good instructor, and a pilot who was very caring about his students under his command. He taught you safety and the necessity for flying properly and well to not only accomplish a mission, but to be back to tell about it and fly another day. While here, he had a great idea. He made a suggestion to the flight of why don't we all chip together equally and we'll rent a house at the beach so that when you fellows get your day off, you can go to the beach and enjoy the ocean and have a place to relax and so on. We all thought that was a good idea, so we signed up and so on. But I also think that while it was a good one-day-a-week retreat for us, it was a great retreat for the instructors who had the use of the house while we were back at the base training, at least on their day off. We finished training at Cecil with a field carrier, and we did that at one of the outlying fields, and that process was to get up as a flight and go fly field carrier, which is flying at the same airspeeds and flight conditions without so much headwind, of course, not being on a carrier. And it was a process of around and around the racetrack, kind of endlessly. Probably was an hour and a half at a time. And a couple of interesting things happened while we were at field carrier. Maybe half the flight would fly in one group and half the flight in another. And one day while I was on the ground watching the guys fly their patterns and take their cut and then take off again, one of the planes that we were watching had an engine failure, although we didn't know what it was, and he disappeared into the woods, and we knew who it was, and we said, oh, he's done. He's down in the woods somewhere. I hope he's okay. As we later found out, he was okay. He landed, he had an engine failure, but he landed in a clearing and did no damage to either to himself or the plane.
Oh, wow.
So, there's one other thing I should mention about my one accident that I had in my Navy training, and while we were flying field carrier landings on a perfectly calm morning, no wind. The first time around that day, I got a cut, having flown an acceptable pattern, and I landed and let the plane roll before giving it throttle to take off again. But unfortunately, I started to begin a ground loop, and I guess I wasn't in the best frame of intelligence mentally that day, and thinking that the plane was going to run off the runway but not sustain any damage, I let it run off the runway, and before I knew it, I was had a gear semi-retraction, or gear failure would be the right word, and I was sitting in an airplane that was no longer moving. I thought, uh-oh, this is the end of me. I'm probably going to wind up in Norman, Oklahoma as a navigator or a bombardier or something like that. Fortunately, the officers running Cecil Field must have seen a few accidents in their day, and I had to answer some questions, but I I was forgiven and was able to continue the training program. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, we went out on the carrier USS Guadalcanal, and everybody in the flight and all the pilots who were out there for carrier qualification did qualify that day. So at that stage of the game, I was able to put that behind me. After we carrier qualified, we again got a 30-day leave, and felt guilty about it, but not so guilty that we couldn't enjoy it. And when that leave was over, we got sent to Norfolk, thinking we were going to be assigned to a squadron or be sent out to the Pacific as replacements. At that time, the number of trained pilots was starting to back up due to fewer casualties than were expected. So my flight was sent to Rose Hill, Michigan, where there was a pilot's pool. And when we got there, we realized how many other fellows were going to the pool also until openings became available. There was also another pilot pool out in the West Coast in Washington State, I believe it was. We did not get into an active squadron until the war was over for a month or so, and then we got I got shipped to Edenton, North Carolina, where we were put into a squadron VB-20. The V meaning heavier for air, and the B is for bombing, and we continued to our practice and our training and integrating into squadron activity. We did fly a formation flight out to Louisville, Kentucky for Armistice Day or Nimitz Day, which was Armistice Day was in November, beginning of November. So a flight of 24 of us left North Carolina, Edenton, North Carolina, for Bowman Field, Louisville. And en route, we got into some cloudy weather. Some point along the way, the skipper decided to fly us through the cloud cover to a higher altitude. So by the time we got to Louisville, there were only 21 of us in the flight, and three of the, tail end Charlies got lost en route and made, I guess you could call it, emergency landings somewhere along the way. So 21 of us got there, and after 24 leaving. But I would say the reason that I stayed with the group was I probably flew the closest formation I ever did in my life, because we must have had a climb through four or five thousand feet of cloud cover. So that was another interesting experience. We were there for 3 or 4 days, and our practice flights there involved learning to fly in formation with planes that came in from various bases, so that we spelled the word Nimitz in the sky. I think I was one of the characters in the letter I. So I just had to follow the man in front of me. But it was quite a display, and we were happy to report no casualties. So after that, we after a few days in Louisville, where we were treated very nicely, we got in our planes and flew on back to Edenton. About 2 weeks after that, an edict came out from the Navy saying anybody who wants to get out of the active duty service, you don't need any points. I guess the implication being that we had plenty of pilots, so you're free to go if you want to go. And I was really not prepared to make a decision like that at that time. I felt like I was coming to a crossroads, or the Y and the cross, or the crossroads in the Y. And I decided to get out, which wasn't necessarily a well thought out decision. And by, I guess, about the end of November, I was back in civilian life. I did sign up for the active reserve and went up to Willow Grove Naval Air Station, where there was they were forming up squadrons. We did some casual flying up from Willow Grove initially, and you could just kind of take an airplane and fly where you want, whether it was Floyd Bennett in New York or Atlantic City Naval Air Station. The reserve program was in a state of flux at that time. I flew in the reserve for a couple of years, and till 1948, I guess it was, and I was graduating from college by 1949, and 1950 I started in the printing business with a couple of other fellows. So my flying actively ceased at that point, and I didn't fly for 14 years after that, but eventually I got flying again privately with another fellow, and flew and had the good fortune to be able to own my own airplane, and flew Bonanzas from 1962 until 1985, at which point I am now an ex-aviator, if there is such a thing, and have had a great experience with flying, and I've traveled to lots of nice places in my own airplane all over the Bahamas and Canada and so on. So I think it's all due to the fantastically efficient program that the Navy operated during the war just as efficiently as they did in peacetime. So it was a great experience, and I always thanked and felt grateful to the Navy for training me and giving me the values that they did. Amen.
Great. Just one question. What got you to Nassau County?
What got me to Nassau County was I used to get invited to visit friends in Miami, Key Biscayne, and having an airplane, I would frequently fly down, usually would bring a few of the fellows down, one of whom had some flight experience. And so on the return trip, flying over the Jacksonville area, when the weather was clear, I would look down at these three beautiful runways at Cecil Field and its proximity to the beach and say, boy, that looks like a nice place to own an airplane and to fly. And eventually that's how I got here. I got interested in Amelia from 10,000 feet and eventually came down and with another fellow bought a condo and then eventually upon retiring from the printing business built my own house. So
great. Well, thank you for sharing your recollections with us and thank you for your service to the nation. This concludes the interview with Philip F. Kelly.